Okay, today's daf in Masechet Beitzah brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, on this Mitzvah Shabbos Chol HaMoed Sukkos is daf Chof Hei, and we're holding at Omar Rabba Baravuna Omar Rav. So we just finished the first sugya about bringing something to Chutz Atum, and we have another issue that has to do with the question of what is considered to be mutter to use things that we are not sure if they were there before Yontif, or if we are sure, how can we be sure, and so on. So, Amarab or Barvun Amarab, somebody, let's say, he closes up the intake of a water channel from Erev Yontif, and then the next day he finds that there are fish in that channel, in the part that was after he had plugged it up. Obviously, those fish must have been there from before Yontif, and therefore, they would be perfectly okay. Now, if that's the question, what about, of course, there's a question over here about Tzeda. Why isn't there a problem with Tzeda? Okay, that we'll have to say that we're talking about that normally a water channel is actually, it's called an ama because it's really only an ama, and therefore there isn't really very far that the fish can run away from you. So that's not called Tzeda, because it's the equivalent of Chatshich. Okay, but I mean, that's a side issue. But in any event, what is interesting is that Rav Chisda said something that seems entirely inappropriate. Because Rav Chisda says that from what Rav said, Midivir Rabbeinu Nilmod, that in the case where you have a chaya, obviously, you know, it's a chaya that comes from outside, like a deer or something, and went ahead and it made like a little den inside of an orchard, and it had a baby there in that den. So then that baby does not require a zimun before Yontif, and you're allowed to shecht it, because there's no way that the baby can run away, and it's the same as the fish that were inside of this narrow water channel. Says, now there's obviously a problem with that, because when you closed off the water channel, you were doing an actual act that was, by definition, showing that the things that are in the water channel currently on the other side are the things that you want to have on Yontif. So you didn't let in other things. Over here, nothing at all was done to show anything. That it just was a question of the fact that it's trappable without a nisr. But why in the world is that sufficient to be called a zimun? Rav Nachman, nafal chavrin b'rav ravata. Our dear friend Rav Chisda is in big trouble, because he just fell into a major machlokas, and boy, is he going to get it over the head. Everybody's going to be coming, attacking him. And some say, by the way, this is just we're just interrupting the flow here for a moment, that some say that actually it was not Rav Chisda, it was Rabba Bar Avuna who had said this, that Medivir Rabbeinu Nimod, that Chayesh Kinin Abapardes Enetzricha Zimun, and it was about Rabba Bar Avuna that Rav Nachman said, oh boy, the son of our chaver, because Rav Huna was his chaver, Rabba Bar Avuna was a son of his chaver, says the son of our chaver, Rav Huna, has now fallen into big problems. Okay, what's the big problem? The big problem is very obvious. In the case of the chaya, he didn't do anything. It happened to be that the chaya was there. Where was the zimun? Mashenkin, in the case of the water channel, Hakavin Maisa, he turned off the water, he closed off the channel, so that fish couldn't get in there after the beginning of Yonta. I mean, that is also an indication that he wants the fish that are on the side that he trapped them within, that he does want them, and that's why he closed it off from before Yonta. And furthermore, it's not even true. You're telling me the Loboy Zimun, that you do not need a specific Zimun for this child of the Chaya that was born there? Vatanya the Brisa says exactly the opposite. If a Chaya is Kidin of a Pardes, so it goes and it makes a den in an orchard and it has a child there, you must be Mizami, Tzricha Mizami. Furthermore, in the case of a Tzipor drawer, you have to be kosher b'chnofeo. You have to tie its wings when you set it aside for Yontif, because otherwise you're not going to be able to distinguish it from its mother, because since it's basically a very small bird, and once it's reached a certain level of growth, it's already as big as the mature bird. So even if it's like a couple days older, how are you going to be able to know that this is not the mother itself. So because of that, if you want to eat the child, then you have to make some kind of siman on its wings. So you tie the wings. And this is actually an edus that came all the way from the time of Shmaya Vavtalya. So, but that means that all of these... Ari, you want to mute, please? Ari?
Sorry.
So that this is something that is definitely the halacha. And that the halacha, that the chaya requires an action of some kind to be mezameh, which is the exact opposite that everybody is saying they're learning out from Rav. Tiyufta, you're right. This is bad news. So these two approach, whether whoever it was, Rav Chista, Rav Baravuna, were both wrong. Okay. So then what it's saying now is that actually there absolutely does need to have a zimun. The problem is there's another Bryce that says it does not need zimun. Umi boy zimun, v'atanya, omer, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, you should know that modim, Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel, who argue before, now listen, the problem over here is that what we're referring to is machlokas Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel, that is not consistent with the way that we learned the machlokas Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel, because the way we learned the machlokas Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel earlier is that according to Beit Hillel, you only have to go up, remember, and say, I want that one, and I want that one tomorrow. And it was Beit Shammai, it says you have to actually handle them. Anyway, Lamaisa, the Tosefta has a different version. So, okay, but whatever it is, there's a machlokas in the Tosefta. It's one step ahead of the way we had it, which is that according to the Tosefta, the Beit Shammai holds that you actually have to tie it, and Beit Hillel holds you have to actually lift it up. Okay, but the bottom line is, however, that Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel are moda, according to this bright in the Tosefta, that if you were mazmin a bird that was before Yontav and it was inside of its nest, and then on Yontav itself you find it in front of the nest, that then it's usher. Okay, we know what that case was. It's not so partial. It was talking about that there was a tenement nests and that there were birds that had been miyuchad in the nest above and were chashed that they came down and that the original birds left. Whatever. Again, this is not what's all that important to us. But what is important is, when do we say that you need that zimun, that staff? Could we have the yonim that are in the dovkot? Or these are yonim that they set up house in your attic. Or these are the tziporim, remember, that they make their nests in the little jars that you put into the wall. So tziporim shkinin obetvichim, or they're in the walls of your big tall house. But if you're talking about the geese or the chickens or the type of doves that they stay there in the house, and the chaya, the chaya shekinin of apartheid, whoops, that's the case we're talking about. And it says over here that in that case, you do not need zimun. Oh my God, we're going back and forth over here. I thought we just said that it's a tiyufta, and everybody said you do need zimun. Here it says you don't need zimun. But tzipor dror, that is consistent with what we said before. Now, not only that, but any types of birds that you were tied up, or that you know for a fact that they were picked up and handled before Yontem, because you recognize them, and they are, wherever they are in the Rishus, where they were Makusha and so on, I don't care if they're in a Borot, or in the houses, or in they're in caves, or they're in a dugout ditch, b'shichin and b'marot, all of these are mutarin, but if they're in trees, they're also for a different reason. This is a side issue. If they're in trees, we're worried that you're going to climb up the tree in order to get them. Okay, so we answer that. But meanwhile, it did say that the animals that were born to the chaya that was kirinah b'pardes apparently actually does not need zimun, which is the way that originally Rav Chista or Rav Baravun had been medayik from Rav. And then let's just conclude already, once we talk about the Braisa and the Kushari, you should just know that in general, not on Yontav, but in general, if you find birds that are tied, stop, you find them on the street, or the Menuah Na'im, or you recognize them as being a bird that someone had picked up and said that they want to keep that bird for Yontav or for anything else, then they are usher to you, not because of Yimanat Amayantav, they're usher to you on any day of the week because of Gezel. Because since the original person had been kena them from the Hefker, and I saw him pick it up, and I'm not allowed to take it, because he has a right to be kena from the Hefker, and it's his. Fine, that's a separate issue. But anyway, meanwhile, it says Beferish that a newborn in a pardes is actually not in need of any type of zimun. But the bride before says it is. Answers, Rav Nachman lo kasha. One is talking about the animal itself, the newborn. The newborn, ain't a chinami, it doesn't require a zimun. The brisa, which says that it did require zimun, and that is what we used as the tiyufta, since it's the mother can get away. So the one that was just born, there we can assume that the guy who's been as smart as it is going to use it. And that much we're made to, but the mother, since the mother can run away. So Mimela, we need to do some type of zimun on it. Ask the Gemara, what do you mean? If the mother can get away, then what good is the zimun? I don't understand. So then zimun? Zimun's not going to help. Ima b'zimun sagila. You would have to actually trap it. But you're not allowed to trap it on Yontif. You have to trap it before Yontif. So the whole thing doesn't make sense. If it can't be referring to the mother, and it can't be referring to the daughter. So now I don't understand. Sorry. You know what? It's not a difference in the animal. You're 100% right. The animal is for sure referring to the newly born animal. But the reason that it's not a contradiction between the two brises is because this brise that says that it does not require zimun, which is consistent with the way that we had Rav Chista before, that's talking about a gina hasmucha le'ir. Now, Tosis points out that we did not want to say this answer earlier. You know, I mean, we could have, because we're ready to make the distinction, so how come we made it a tiyufta? We could have made this distinction before. The Tosis says, because when you're talking about Amoraim, you're talking about a bride, so you could say the bride is giving you a case, right? So then you can figure out what the case is. But if an Amora is giving a halacha, he has to speak out the circumstances. You can't start saying, well, you know, if Chista is talking about a gina, that's smuchala years, you can't do that kind of thing. Because if that's what he meant, then he would have had to include that in the psak. So it's not an answer to the original tiyufta, but it definitely does answer the contradiction between the brises. That we're talking about over here with that last brisa that says you do not require zimun, that's talking about where the garden that it set it up is right near the town. So Mimela, everybody knows that it's there and plans to use it. And therefore, it does not require zimun mashenka. The original brisa was talking about a gina, which is not smuchan over there. There's nothing about it that shows that just because it's in a garden, it's the equivalent of zimun. Okay, Sir Richard, we are ready. Once we're talking about going on to from Tzeda, now after Tzeda, of course, the next malacha is Shchita. That's the Seder of the malachas, the Gabi Shabbos. For Tzeda, we said, remember, we had all kinds of different approaches as to why, in fact, that Tzeda is also, it's not Mutter because of Eichel Nefesh. We had the psukim that are brought from the Yerushalmi, or Rashi's approach, it could have been done before, or the Ramban's approach, it's not the type of thing that you do at home, or the other Rishonim have learned that it's considered to be Melechet Avodah, because usually you will hire people to do that, as you'll buy it from a professional, you're going to do it yourself, whatever the pshat is. The next line, of course, which you are allowed to do on Yontev, is Shchita. So for sure I can do Shchita. The question over here is where I want to do Shchita, not in order specifically to eat the animal. I don't really need the animal to eat because I already ate. However, the problem is that this animal turns suddenly very ill and I am very nervous. If I don't check it now, that it's going to die. And then I'm going to lose all the value in it or most of the value in it. So if you have a behema that is misukenet, and it's in bad shape, and it could die at any minute. So there, the halacha is, you cannot check that if you don't need it, unless you know that you're going to be able to eat. Yesh shahut b'yom l'chol b'imenu kezayis tzili. You have to at least have enough time to, even just to broil it on an open flame, which could just take like a minute, right? But at least you need to have a kezayis so that you can eat on yantev, and over there, it's already would be mutter because of the hayo. So we allow you to do that, not to be mafsid, the behemoth. Rabbi Akiva says, why do you have to roast it? You have to roast the meat. I mean, lots of people will eat the thinly sliced raw meat, right? I mean, that's like tata. So Rabbi Akiva says, look, you can take a piece of raw meat right from Beit Vichata, which sounds like from right around the Beit HaShchita. Why right around the Beit HaShchita? Because the Beit HaShchita does not require any kind of removal of the hide. It's all open. You already cut it. And there's nothing else you need to do. So that could take 10 seconds. And the way you were learning it, I needed 2 minutes to go ahead and to actually put it on the coals and so on. I don't need to do that. And of course, I don't need to take out the blood because raw meat does not need to be deblooded. As long as the dam wasn't burished from the basar, it's not going to be yasser. Okay. So therefore, it should be mut. Now, in the event that you shecht an animal out in the field, so what are you going to do? You can't bring it home on a mot or a mota. You can't put it on either a regular, you know, a pole or a small pole, or similar than it's talking about on an actual bed kind of thing. Okay, pasha is the difference between a long pole, a small pole, even a small pole that doesn't appear to be so big, but it's carried by two people. And that is something that looks like you're actually engaged in business. You come in, it's like it's afsha milsa, which is like it makes a big fuss on yontif and doing things that are not specifically appropriate for the yontif. A whole animal to be schlepping around and through the fields into your home. But what you can do is you could just bring like a, you know, you make a package and you can bring like each piece by piece. You put it into a bag and you carry it on. So maybe be a do, evorim, evorim. Omar Rami Bar Abba, you should know that when the Torah says that you, when you bring a korban eila, it says you have to be hifshit, etahola, you have to take off the hide, you have to skin it, and you have to be butcher it, venituach. You should know that in the same way that the Torah was mechay of you to do that for the korban eila, for the shamayim, Hu hadin lekatzavim. The same thing is true if there's a butcher, and the butcher has the meat that he shechted, he's got to do the same thing. He can't sit there and start eating the meat before he does skinning and he does the butchering. It's not clear. It says over here, mikan limda Torah derecheret. It's teaching you the way to act. Shelo yochal adam basar. Person shouldn't eat before the actual skinning and butchering. So now, I mean, look, he said over here, limda tera derecheretz. I mean, does derecheretz mean literally that that's the only consideration? That it's sort of a just not nice? It's a question of etiquette? Or is it a question of halacha? Because, I mean, what's he coming to tell me? I mean, if he's coming to tell me that don't you dare eat before you had a chance to check out whether the animal was a trefa, and if you didn't do the hefshet v'nituach, how are you going to check out whether it was a trefa? Like you just take a piece of the first piece of meat that's available to you. So maybe you're coming to tell me that do not listen to Rav Huna, because Rav Huna said that a behema, as long as the behema is alive, it has a cheskas iser. And Rashi learns that cheskas iser is the iser of Eiver Menachai. Tosfos Tainis, we had the same sugya back at Chulon. Tosfos Tainis, Eiver Menachai doesn't make sense, because once the animal is dead, it's obviously not Eiver Menachai. So what do you mean it's becheskas iser? It's not Eiver Menachai, I know that for a fact. Therefore, Tosfos says there is a separate iser, which is called Eina zvucha, because the Torah says, v'zavachta kasher tzivitecha, you have to be shaychet and then eat. And if you don't shaychet and then eat, So then you're going to be over on that mitzvah saseh. That's an iser. And that iser is, in fact, you have to know that it was properly shechted. The fact that it's dead doesn't take off the din of eira zvucha. It only takes off the din of eira menachah. So it's just, anyway. So the behema, as long as it's alive, then it's because iser until you know for a fact that it was properly nishkata. Hachivad al-chababa nishkata. But once you know it was nishkata, you do not have to worry about whether it's a treifa. Because then it's becheskas heter omedet, achiva dalacha b'manitrefa. The animal is assumed to be a kosher animal. If afterwards you find that there's a problem somewhere, I understand. But you don't have to be chayshesh until you find some indication that there's a problem of trafis. So maybe that's good for the point. Maybe what it was that Rami Bar Abba was telling us is, don't listen to Rav Huna. You should be careful to make sure that you check for treifas before you eat. And therefore, the same way that the Torah tells you that a korban eila requires hefshet v'nituach, a butcher should know that he's got to do hefshet v'nituach in order to allow the customer to himself should first check the meat for tarfas before it is that he eats. So is that what it was that Rami Bar Abba was saying? But that doesn't make sense, because the Mishnah right here actually backs up Rav Huna. Because how else do you explain the fact that Rabbi Akiva says all you need to do is cut a little sliver of meat from the Beis HaShechita and then you could eat it? But how could you eat it? So obviously Rabbi Akiva is relying on Rav Huna, because you're not going to be able to check the lungs and the intestines and so on and so forth. You just take a piece of meat from the Beis HaShechita. So what that must mean is that Rav Huna is right. Unless you have something that indicates to you that there's a problem of tarfas, the ruling is, lo machzikin an isura. We don't create isurim for no reason. But why should we assume that there was an isur here? So then, I'm assuming that's what Rabbi Akiva meant when he said, take it from Beit Tvichata. I mean, he must mean from its neck, right? My lami Beit Tvichata mamash, the place where you shechted it, I guess. So Rami Bar Abba is not going to tell you something that is against Rabbi Akiva, is it? I mean, so it seems that Rav Huna is 100% correct. You do not need to check for tarfas before you actually eat it. By the way, this is not true bizman hazeh because of a takanas hageinim. And the riboy of tarfas in the lungs, some extend this now to other tarfas. And because of that, there goes that you actually have to check it. Anyway. But, says the Gemara, what if we don't understand Rabbi Akiva that way? What if we don't understand Rabbi Akiva is referring to the Beis HaShechita? Maybe what Rabbi Akiva meant was, lo, mimakom shetovachat achilata. It means from the place in the animal which digests, tovachat in the sense of breaking apart through the digestive process, what it was that it ate. Which would mean that you would have to first open the animal, check to see whether there are any tarfas, and then you could take apart from where it was being digested, the food, right? But that means you have to actually first skin it, and then you have to butcher it. Says the Gemara, it cannot mean that. Because Reb Chiya said in the Braita, that was quoting Rabbi Akiva, went out of his way to say that what Rabbi Akiva said meant exactly what it sounded like. Mi beit tvichata mamash. That he means you can cut a little piece of meat directly from the Beis HaShechita. Not to try to kvetch in a different pshat that it's referring to the intestines and you make a bedika. That's not true. Okay, so then if that's the case, then Rami Bar Abba, there's no reason for us to say Rami Bar Abba is going to be arguing on the Braisa. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva is backing Rav Huna. It must be that Rami Bar Abba meant exactly what he said. I mean, if you look at what he said, limda teira derech eretz, okay? So derech eretz should be understood what it's saying. It's not coming to teach me a halacha. It's coming to teach me derech eretz. That's simply not appropriate. El Rami Bar Chama was only coming to tell me orach harakam ashram. He's telling you proper etiquette. Because if you eat in that fashion, you look like a Rav Tam. What the heck is wrong with you, man? You can't hold on a little bit and be a mensch? Well, you got to grab a piece of meat right off of the animal before you've done any processing. It's disgusting. So you don't want to look like you're someone that is so so hungry, can't wait a minute. Kiritanya, lo yochal adam shum ubatzal mirosho. Don't eat garlics or onions from the top. Eat from the leaves. And ima chal, and if he did eat it from the top, so then he looks like a raftan. It's not nice. A razor raftan. Another thing. Lo yishta adam koso bevatachat. You got a cup of wine. Don't down it like they do in the Westerns, you know? And I'll drink the whole thing down glop. No, that's a slob. Vimshata hareze gargaran. If you drink that way, so you look like a guy who's like a, you know, what do you think you are, a cowboy? Tana rabbana. Hashote koso bevatachat hareze gargaran. So like a guzzler. Shnayim, if you drink your cup down in two swallows, that's normal. If you're one of these sippers, yeah, then you look like one of these, you know, sophisticates. I gotta enjoy every life. So then you look like Gasei Ruach. You look like these stuck-up people. Anyway, there's other things that Romi Bar Chama said that has to do with the same type of thing. It's similar. And in the same way that Torah said, you have to be careful about the idea of Hefshet V'Nituach, Romi Bar Abba pointed out, you should know that there's a lot of things in nature that show this kind of thing too. Let's say a chatsuva. So chatsuva was a type of tree or a type of grass, different Mishanim, that grows roots directly downwards. And Yoshua used that to plant along the boundaries of the different nachalos in Eretz Yisrael in order to make sure that people would not afterwards come and start arguing about where the gvul was and try to take a property that belonged to another guy. So the fact that there is such a natural occurring plant, that is mikata raglem de katsavaya. That cuts the legs out of of the raglem de rishaya. That people that steal, this shows them, pay attention to the chatsuva. You'll see, don't bend things to include other people's areas. The netiya, which is the halacha of orla, in which the Torah makes you wait 3 years until you're going to be able to eat from the tree, that cuts the legs out from under these butchers who don't have the patience to go ahead and to do the Hefshet V'Nituach. And people who are boil nidais, I mean, you can't wait until the girl goes to the mikveh, right? Like, that's too much to ask of you. The same idea. I mean, if somebody can wait 3 years before he can eat from a tree that he's planted and put in so much work into, believe me, you can wait for her to go to the mikveh. Turmusa, which is the turmus beans, they are very difficult to prepare, as Barnea can tell us. Here we are, lupines. So in order to enjoy lupine, you have to boil it for 7 times. It has to be stewed, otherwise it's extremely bitter. And that cuts the legs out from the Jews. I mean, we say it as a euphemism, the enemies of Yisrael, but it means from Yisrael. In what way? Because take a look at this awful pasuk, Shenema. Vayosivu b'nei Yisrael asot hara b'enei Hashem. And what did they do? Count. Vayavdu et ha-baalim, v'et ha-ashtarot, v'et Elohei Aram, v'et Elohei Tzidon, v'et Elohei Moav, v'et Elohei b'nei Amon, v'et Elohei Plishtim. That is 7 different sicko avodah zorahs. Now, every single one of these avodah zorahs brought a response from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if you take a look through the whole story of Shoftim, every single one put Klal Yisrael through hell. So now you have to suffer for 40 years for this thing, and you have to suffer for 12 years for this thing, and so on and so forth. So basically, they were stewed 7 times, one for each one of these Avodah Zarahs, right? Okay, so that means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's a lot of tircha to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to have to do all these horrible things to his children, right? So, okay, so we put him through boiling us 7 times. And then what does it say at the end of the pasuk? Vayazvu et Hashem v'lo avadu. I mean, no kidding. I mean, you're telling me vayazvu et Hashem. It's pretty obvious v'lo avadu, no? I mean, Rashi should never vayazvu et Hashem any yodea shelo avadu. What is that supposed to mean? So matam v'lomar lo avadu. Aha. Omar Rabbi Elazar. This is what HaKadosh Baruch was saying. You know, a turmus, you boil it 7 times. Okay, so at least after 7 times, you get to have a good-tasting dessert, right? So Klal Yisrael put me through this. 7 times I've got to stew them. And then at the end, afilu keturmus hazeh, sheshoklim oto sheva pamim v'ochlin oto bekinoach surah, at least there's a little bit of dessert, so I should have like a couple of good boys at the end of the seven times that they had to get stewed, so we should be able to have something gishmak between us, a nice little dessert at least, even that not. Afilu keturmus hazeh lo asa ani banai. My kids couldn't even treat me like a turmus. That's how little I matter. Tanam Ishmael the Rebbe Meir. Mipneiman nitna Torah li Yisrael. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu give Torah to Klal Yisrael and feel that it was necessary? It's because Shehin Azin, they are such tough people that basically if you give them the Torah, it's like you got to dedicate your whole life to this. You're spending all your time. You realize how little you know. You gradually come to be a mensch. People that are such tough people, like these Jews, the only thing that can tame them is Torah. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them the Torah. Tanan Devei Rabbi Shmuel, why does the Pasuk in this week's parasha say, Mi mino esh dat lamo? Umar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. These people, Ru'uyin alalo, shetinatein lahem dat esh. These people are exactly the appropriate people to have this kind of very powerful Torah to be given to them, because nothing else is going to tame them. They're like wild animals. Ikeni Amrei, datayim shel elu. Datayim, not their religion. Datayim means, you know, like datayim melech ein amosim. The social structures, the way these people act, the way that they carry on. Datayim means the way that they carry on. These people are awful. Constantly fighting, constantly getting into trouble. The way that these people act is like fire. And the only thing that could possibly tame them, Yomalei nitna Torah liYisrael, ein koluma v'loshen yecholun amod bifneim. These guys would go out and take over the entire world, to do whatever they want in the world. You give them a little bit of time, and there they are on top, bossing everybody around, coming up with the latest developments, and so on and so forth. They're horrible people. So unless there's something you can do to keep them in place, it would be a disaster. So then what it's saying is, Eish dat mi mino, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave from his right hand a Torah, because these people have an Eish dat. They're like constantly burning up inside, driving the world insane. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them the Torah, so that at least they could somehow or other be part of a normal world. Behind it, Amar Reb Shimon. There are three things in the world that are really, really tough. Among the different umays of the Olam is Yisrael. Yisrael and the umays, they're very tough. The Kelev in the Chayas, whatever you do, they keep coming back. The Tarnagol, Sheba Ofot, whatever you do, they keep insisting on their way. Yesh omrim af eiz, that actually the goats are azim, that's what they're called, eiz. So the eiz bibeim edaka, and others say also that slaf, which is caper, in among the ilanot, Rashi says, I have no idea what that is referring to. Fine, so Tosfos says, look, I mean, the slaf is miyuchad in two things. First of all, it has three separate products that it keeps pushing on you. So in other words, all the different parts of it, of the caper bush are edible separately. They have the onot, the kafrisida, each part is itself a different thing to eat. And there's also something else, and that is that every single day it presents something new edible. So it's like it never gives up. That's the pshat az. Doesn't give up. You can't keep it down. That's the point of Yisrael. You can't keep him down. Okay. The next thing in the Mishnah said, if you shechted the animal outside, don't bring it on a moat or on a motas. So what's so bad about doing that? Only because it looks like an uvda dechol. So it takes away a little bit from the special chashivas of the Kedusha of Yontov, because you seem to be acting the way you would normally act. Now, there's other things that are also, so to speak, not in the spirit of the day. So what are things that are not in the spirit of the day, even though mi'ikra din it's mutter? Let's say you have a blind man who lamaisa can get around, but he's used to going out with his cane, tapping along the way. Don't go out with the cane if you can get along without it. And a shepherd should not go out carrying his backpack. v'lo aroa betarmilo, and neither a male or a female should go out carried in a chair, which is, it just looks like things that are not yontov day. What? You're not allowed to be carried in a chair? Didn't Reb Yaakov Aridi said that we had an old man in our neighborhood, zaken echad haya b'shkunatinu, v'haya yotzei b'glodiki shelo. He used to go out in this folding chair, Rashi says, and he was carried in this chair, and then when he arrived wherever he was, they would fold up the chair. But l'maisa, they carried him in the street, and they came and asked Reb Yeshua ben Levi if it was really okay to do this on yontov. Ubalo v'shalos Reb Yeshua ben Levi, and he said, if it's a person that people need to learn from or whatever, so then it's mutter. And actually, they ended up being moderate because on the basis of what Achishakya said, he said, I used to carry Ravuna in a chair from Hine to Shile and from Shile to Hine, and these are within the Tchum, and I used to carry him from there. But he gave Shirim at different places. The Omer of Nachar by Yitzchak, I used to carry Mar Shmuel, not that far, but from the sun into the shade, from the shade into the sun when he got cold. Anyway, all of this was done in public on a chair. So apparently, it is mutter. Yeah, okay, we said that Rabbi Yeshua said that in a case where Rabbi Martzrichim Lo, and he's giving a shir, so then it's mutter. But when it said in the Braisa that it's usher, it was talking about stam for people. Omer Rav Nachman, Lechama Barada Shliach Tzion. So the Lechama Barada used to be one of the people, they used to send people specifically to Eretz Yisrael to find out halachas or to bring money. Anyway, they would call them Shliach Tzion. That was done later on in time also, when they would have the opposite, they would have people that were coming from Eretz Yisrael and would be collecting money for the various institutions in Eretz Yisrael, for the Yishuv. They called them the Shliach Tzion. So Nachman asked Reb Chama Barada, he said, listen, next time you go up to Eretz Yisrael, I'd like you to do me a favor and go the long way around. Go up the Summa Tzur, because that's where Reb Yaakov Aridi lives. And I want you to ask Reb Yaakov Aridi, what does he hold about using a chair to be carried on Yontif, right? Because he was quoted over here that there was the Zaken Echad Shehaya B'Shkunateinu. I want you to ask him personally, because I know the way that these stories always get messed up, playing the game of telephone. You ask him directly, Maton Beis, what do you hold about the chairs? Anyway, by the time he actually got there, he found that Rabbi Yaakov Baridi was nifter. So obviously, Rabbi Chaim Barada had gone the whole way for no reason. So Kisolik Ashkechel Rabbi Zreika, so when he came in the main Yishuv, so he found Reb Zreika, who was also a big Pesach, so he asked Reb Zreika, Kise, Ma Aton Beis, what do you hold personally about the question of whether he could be carried around or not? He wanted to bring back at least some psak from Eretz Yisrael, so to Reb Nachman. So he asked him, and Reb Zreika told him, I could tell you what Reb Ami said. Reb Ami said that it's okay, as long as you're not mikatef, as long as you don't put the chair on your shoulder. What exactly does that mean? It means that you carry it the way you would carry an alunki. Now, alunki, basically, you have two people side by side. You know, this is the way that if somebody in the field is hurt, you have to take them out in an area that there's no way to carry them. So what you do, two people will put their hands on the shoulder of the other guy, and then they can hold the person between them as if he's on a seat that's resting on their shoulders, and that is something that is safe. And then if you put a seat on top of that, so then that is, for someone who's ill or whatever, that's called an alunki. Today they use the word alunki for an actual cot that you carry. What do you call those?
A stretcher.
But
it's referred to as called a fireman's carry.
Okay, but that was called an alunki in the Gemara. So over here, the fireman's carry had a chair on it, not just that you would carry him on the shoulders. But wait a minute, is that really true? Didn't Reb Nachman allow his wife, Yalta, to be carried on an alunki? Shaina Yalta was different. Yalta was scared to death that she was going to fall if they, she was carried any other way. And as Tosa says, she was a Choshevah woman, and she was related also to Resh Galuta and so on. So people would use her for influence, whatever. She was also, obviously wasn't given a drosha, but she was needed by the rabbi. So since that was the only way to keep her stable enough that she could be carried, so he was matrin. A Meimar and Marzutra would be carried that way during the Shabbat of the Rigla, which is this week, actually, right? So the Shabbat of the Rigla, actually, were so many people that would come to the shir that it was like really dangerous that they could get pushed over and they were nervous and so on. So because of that also, Mishum Biyututa, they were afraid of falling if they would be carried any other way. Or some say that wasn't why. The reason that they were carried was because they were old men. And if they came into the Beis HaMedrash and walked to their seat, it could take like 10 minutes. And meanwhile, everybody was standing and it was a duchka ditzibura. So like this, they just carry them in 10 seconds. They were in their place. So some say it was Mishom Ducha Ditzipurah.